This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and FM 90.9 HD2 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have a question or two, give us a call and talk to Susan. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. Susan is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She works with clients of all ages and athletes on enhancing health, fitness, and sports performance. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's also the consulting sports dietitian for Illini Athletics and leads nutrition and cooking classes at the new Division of Campus Recreation ARC building on the Champaign-Urbana campus of the University of Illinois. She's a member of the American Dietetic Association and the American College of Sports Medicine. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, and you'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net and www.rkteamnutrition.net. Again, listeners, you're invited to join us this afternoon with questions about nutrition. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Here we are at the height of summer.
It's a wonderful day today. It's beautiful.
Oh, beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Well, one of the things that you said maybe we could talk about today as we wait for people to join us on the telephone, whole grains.
Yes. There's been a lot of interest in whole grains lately, and now our national guidelines, when we talk about grain servings and what's recommended, we actually specify that try to get half your grains from whole grains, or at least some of what you eat every day, not just from refined grain products, but actually the actual whole grain itself. So I thought it'd be good to talk a little bit about that, because that can be kind of confusing for people to figure out what's a whole grain, what's not a whole grain.
Right. Okay. So what's the difference?
Well, a whole grain, and here's the actual definition. Whole grains actually are grains that have not been modified, so they lose nutrients. In other words, a whole grain may be, whole wheat. It can be ground. It could be the wheat berry itself. I brought some wheat berries just to, show you and look at the actual berry. We could eat that. We could boil that up and eat the actual berry. Or it could be ground, but nothing is taken away. In other words, the outside of the grain, what we would call more the fiber part of the grain, is not taken away. The bran, exactly, is not taken away.
Okay.
And if we look at that outer shell or that bran, that has a lot of the fiber in it. That's got B vitamins. So you don't take away that. Therefore, you don't lose B vitamins. You don't lose vitamin D. You lose the fiber that's naturally in there. And so that would be the whole grain itself. So you're actually getting the whole part of the grain. So if you look, for example, at something, here's some whole wheat pasta that I brought. Pasta is probably one of the places where, in the last few years, there have been a lot more products available now that really do taste good and are easy to cook. And this, the ingredients here is just whole wheat flour, and basically that's it in this pasta. So if we'd look at the nutrients here, a serving of this pasta actually has 6 grams of fiber, which is quite a bit for a grain.
Okay.
And so that would be, a serving would be a full cup of this when it's cooked up, maybe a little bit more, and a full ounce of protein. And so often you've got more protein as well when you've got the whole grain too. So that's what we're really looking for, is trying to say, what are easy ways? Easy ways to shoot to a whole grain might be if you look at bread and whole wheat flour is the first ingredient, or whole oat flour, or it wouldn't have to be wheat. It could be some other grain, and that's the first ingredient. There are a lot of breads on the market now that have bumped up fiber, but they may not be from natural fiber. So those aren't really as good. In other words, they may add some different types of fiber, but you still lose the B vitamins, you lose the natural things that are found in it. So the best thing to do is to actually look on the label, and does it say 100% whole grain or whole wheat as the first ingredient?
Yeah, it's that the bread aisle can be kind of challenging, because you might pick up a loaf of bread and it's multi-grain, but it doesn't mean it's whole grain, right?
Right, exactly. And just looking at, we always say as dietitians, we always say, well, look at the fiber content of something. That's one other good way to see if something's a good product. And certainly more fiber is better, really, no matter where it comes from. But if you want the whole benefit, it still has to also say 100% whole wheat or whole grain, as well as having more fiber, just because, again, a lot of companies will use an enriched product or just use the middle of the grain and not the outside shell and then add in some of these other fibers.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say now is that there's more to whole grain than fiber.
Right.
There's good things in a whole grain that go beyond fiber, which is a good thing. The fiber right. thing is a good thing.
Right, exactly. Because some of the antioxidants that are found in the, particularly in the germ, which is another part of the grain that's more kind of, we call that a nutrition storehouse part of the grain. Sometimes that's taken away too, and all that's left is the middle or this endosperm. And there's not nearly that provides energy, carbohydrates, some protein, but not nearly all the other nutrients that are in there. So if we look for things like vitamin E or antioxidants, then you really want to look at the whole part of the grain as well, the bran, the endosperm, and the germ.
Okay. And I'm looking at a nifty handout that mm-hmm. you've got for us this month, a couple of handouts developed by an intern of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And here it on the germ, there's a little illustration. So folks, if I'll give you the address, you can write in and get this later. But the germ contains B vitamins, vitamin E, trace minerals, and antioxidants. That's all in the germ, so that's good. And then the bran has B vitamins and trace minerals as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what's in the endosperm? That's if it's a refined grain, mm-hmm. that's what you're left with, the endosperm.
Right.
Is that correct? Okay.
Right. And that's primarily where you're going to find the energy, the
okay.
carbohydrate, maybe a little protein. And so that's still good for you, but mm-hmm. again, you miss out on everything else. So that would be if we looked at white bread or if you had white rice or white pasta. Those things are still good foods. There's nothing to say that that's not something mm-hmm. good to eat. But in terms of quality, it's not nearly as high quality as the actual whole grain or what we always try to encourage people to eat, brown rice, or try brown rice or the chewier. You know, that's another good indication. If you're actually having to chew something a little bit longer, it might generally be pretty good for you. So more chewing is a good indication.
Okay. Now you said the latest recommendation is that for our breads and cereals and grains, 50% of what we eat on a daily basis is recommended to be whole grains. So what does that look like?
That would look like, trying from the food guide pyramid, let's say, to get 6 grains a day. If you're shooting for 6 grains a day, at least for most people, then we'd say, well, half of those grains should be whole grains. So, for example, in the morning, instead of having more of a refined grain, you know, there are a lot of cereals, let's say Frosted Flakes, we use that as an example, that would be more refined. So instead of that, maybe you're having Wheat Chex or oat bran cereal or something like that. So there's a whole grain versus a non-whole grain. Even though some of the cereals have some whole grain in them, they're not going to be a full serving of whole grain, many of those. And so you're doing that. Maybe at lunch you're having 2 slices of whole wheat bread as opposed to white bread for a sandwich. So all of a sudden now you've got 3 whole grains in your diet right there. So it's not really that difficult to do. Even something like popcorn is a whole grain.
Right.
Right. So for a snack you might have popcorn as opposed to cheese crackers. And there you're getting a whole grain as opposed to a refined grain.
Okay.
And so many people, when they adapt their diet and really focus on trying to eat healthier, they're naturally just going to eat mostly whole grains. They're going to have whole wheat tortillas, and they're going to buy whole wheat pitas, and they're going to some of those processed foods. They're probably naturally going to buy those because they're looking for more nutrients anyway. So many people, when they start eating healthier or become more aware of it, getting these 3 whole grains a day is not difficult because you're going to naturally gravitate towards whole wheat pasta and brown rice and things like that.
Okay. Now, whole wheat, of course, jumps and leaps to mind. And popcorn also is mm-hmm. is a whole grain. But there are lots of other things that are whole grains. And maybe
right.
we could run down a few of those because some of these things we'll be familiar with. I know you mentioned brown rice. And you brought the rye berries?
Yes, I brought those are wheat
berries.
But
okay.
rye berries look very similar to that. I also brought some couscous, and couscous and quinoa, and those are a little different type of grain. Some people wouldn't consider them exactly as grains, but they really are in the grain family, and that would be whole grain. Other things like barley. Here's some barley that we think about barley in soup. But barley is an excellent whole grain. You can just buy regular barley and boil that up. You can certainly, one thing you could do is boil that up. Barley, and one of the other sheets that I brought along actually has the comparison chart of how long to cook these different grains. Mm-hmm. So for, if you're making a cup of barley, you're going to use about 3 cups of water and cook that around an hour. And barley itself, then, if you make extra, you could easily throw that into something that you've already made. Maybe throw it into salad, throw it into some soup that's already made, even prepared canned soup, vegetable soup, you throw barley in there that's already cooked. That's great. That adds a lot more whole grain, a lot more whole fiber. So that would be one thing. Buckwheat groats, bulgur is a whole grain. Cornmeal is actually a whole grain if it's actually the corn. And corn itself, I think of as a grain more so. So just having corn as a side dish is great. Or we had corn on the cob yesterday. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's more of a real whole grain. That's just the corn. Oats. So you think of actually eating regular oats. We talked about the brown rice, the rye berries, rye flakes, things like that. And then there are other ones, teff, triticale. There's other different types of grains that I actually brought one of the products.
And
that
what
we'll
is
see.
Teff? T-E-F-F.
Well, it's another natural grain. And it says here, I'll read it from the front, this highly nutritious whole grain flour is made from the smallest grain in the world. So teff is evidently the smallest grain in the world. And I've used teff flour a little bit. I've never actually had the grain itself. Compared to other grains, it's much larger percentage of bran and germ. So that makes sense. That's what we want, a higher percentage of the bran and germ. So it's a good source of fiber, protein, and iron. And it's actually been used a lot in Ethiopia. So it's, you know, some of these grains we don't find very often around here, but there are companies that process different types of grains and have them in package form. So this is teff flour. And you can use teff flour. It says here, substitute up to 1/4 cup teff flour per cup of whole wheat flour in your baked goods or regular wheat flour. So you could certainly use this. It doesn't always work. Some of these whole grains don't work as well in the flour category as white flour. They wouldn't make the same product. But usually you can substitute 1/4 cup for 1/4 cup of another one and maybe 1/4 of what you use.
I suppose it depends on what kind of product you're going to make, whether it's going to be a cake or mm-hmm. it's going to be a muffin,
mm-hmm.
two different products.
Right.
So what
right.
does this taste like? Can you taste it in the product
that you
make?
No, I don't think with using a small amount like this, kind of like whole wheat flour, when you would substitute maybe 1/4 or 1/2 of what you're using, you don't always taste the difference in that. And this doesn't have a lot of fat. Some grains are higher in fat. For 1/4 cup, this has 1 gram of fat. Sometimes that's where more of the flavor is, so it's not that high. But it's a little bit higher in protein, and because, again, it's more of the bran, then it's going to have some fiber. This has 4 grams of fiber for 1/4 cup of flour, so that's quite a bit. Though that's very different than white flour that you would use in something in terms of the nutrients there. So I don't know. I was thinking today when I was getting ready for the show that I wondered if any of our listeners have really good recipes that they've used different types of grains in that they found are easy or work well for them. That anyone might want to call in with.
Yeah, and the numbers to call in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. And as I mentioned, she brought a couple of handouts that her business, Nutrition on the Move, has developed, and they're really nice looking.
Yes.
Very well done. And they're very helpful on this sometimes confusing business of whole grains. So if you'd like to get a copy of these two handouts, drop us a line at the Afternoon Magazine, WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. And if you could include a self-addressed stamped envelope, that would be terrific. 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions and comments for Susan Kundrat. Let's take a call now from a listener in Urbana on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. I've been a whole grain fanatic for many years. And I have developed my own signature bread, I guess you would call it. In fact, my grandchildren call it grandma bread. And it's my price of admission into their house. That's how much they like it. My secret, if it is a secret, is that I use a combination of whole grains, and I'm sure to always include oatmeal, and I soak it first, and I also allow the bread dough to remain kind of sticky, and I let it rise for a long time and keep stirring it down. That way, the grains that otherwise might be a little bit dry are more moist. Now, it isn't a light bread. I mean, it's pretty hefty stuff, but it's pretty good. So I just thought I'd throw that in. Yeah. And also, I have a cookbook that my daughter gave me. It's getting old, but it's still really good. And it was put out by La Leche League.
Okay.
And all of their recipes, all their baked goods, I think I'm safe in saying that, almost anyway, are designed to be used with whole grains, which is such a help because so many things you don't want to experiment with too much. So, so I find it very, very helpful.
Okay. Would you, I don't know if you want to share your recipe with us this afternoon, but if it's too long, I suppose I would ask you to send it to us, and then we can make it available to listeners next month. Or do you want to keep it a secret?
Let's see. No, it's not a secret. It is somewhat approximate.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And so I'm not sure it's exactly a recipe. It's more of a technique. But I could jot down the approximate.
Okay. Why don't you do that and send it to us?
All right.
Yeah, I'd be interested. What are the other combination of grains, just out of curiosity, that you do use in there?
Pretty much whatever happens to be in my refrigerator. Rye, almost always whole rye flour. Mm-hmm. If I have some soy flour, I put a small amount of that, but you don't want too much.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else?
You said oatmeal.
Oatmeal, yeah, that's probably what finds its way into the bread, unless I just happen to have something else.
Okay. Sounds like you're a good baker.
Yeah, sounds like they're lucky grandchildren.
Well, I'm so happy that they just really, really like something that is so very good for them.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to getting that in the mail.
Okay.
And we'll take another call now. Well, next, we're going to go to Effingham, a listener on line two. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about whole grain white bread. It's hard to get kids to eat whole wheat bread and 100% whole wheat bread. So we've been buying the whole grain white bread. Are we doing our kids any favor with this bread? Or I know it has some enriched wheat flour in it. And so just calling to see if I'm doing my kids any favor.
Well, that's a good question because that type of bread certainly I think is, and I've bought that before too, certainly it's better than white bread. And I would say it would be in the middle of whole wheat bread and white bread. And so that would be generally those types of breads have extra fiber added back into it and have some nutrients added back into it. It wouldn't be the same as the whole wheat, but it's definitely, again, a step up from white bread. And you can tell when you eat it, it's a little bit heavier. That bread's a little bit heavier, and they add some of the different types of fibers back in. So I would say it'd be better, but, you know, moving them, sometimes kids, you know, a lot of what they eat, particularly breads and things, it's about the texture, and a lot of adults too. And so sometimes when they get used to eating a little heavier bread like some of those are, then it's easier to move them to maybe half whole wheat, half white bread. And you know, that's another thing to look for, that there are breads that are, they're not 100% whole wheat, but they have some whole wheat and some white. And that would probably still be then a step up from the white enriched with extra fiber. So, but that's a good place to go with kids because what you're choosing is certainly better for them than the white bread. And that gets them used to having some more nutrients in their diet, even if it's not 100% whole wheat. So that's
okay,
good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener on a cell phone, line 3. Hi.
Hi. My question's a little bit off the topic of whole grains, but I've been on a fairly restricted calorie diet, and it's been very successful for me. But one of my problems is that I'm discovering that I'm just hungry all the time now. And I was wondering if your guest had any suggestions for maybe ways of structuring meals, foods that would maybe increase the feeling of satiation. I'm having a really hard time feeling full.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a couple things, and what you're talking about is not unusual, particularly when you've dropped your calories some and you're trying to lose weight or trying to drop your calories for another reason. But two things you could think about doing. We do know that when you're eating on a schedule, generally you stay more satisfied. So if you're not eating every 3 hours, I would try to do that. And you can still keep your calories down by doing that. The other thing is getting protein at every meal and trying to, you know, there's a lot of research out there right now looking at weight management and which amount of protein is better and how to break that down. And there's some consensus now, not everyone agrees, but some consensus that taking your total protein intake, if you're trying to keep a lower calorie diet, we want your protein a little bit higher than normal. So let's say, for example, if I had someone who was 150 pounds and they were trying to drop their calories, I'd probably put their protein intake more like 100 grams or so. I'd put that higher than I would for someone who was trying to maintain weight. And so then we'd take that protein and we divide it into at least 3 equal servings. So for breakfast, you might have between 20 and 30 grams of protein, 20 to 30 at lunch, 20 to 30 at dinner, then maybe a 10-gram protein snack in between breakfast and lunch and dinner. So that what we've done is say, well, we're going to increase protein. We know protein is helpful with satiety. We know that if you have a little bit more protein at meals, most people feel more satiated for a longer period of time. And so that way we're getting protein throughout the day, and that's helpful. And then the other thing we look at, too, is fiber. And so fiber, no matter where it comes from, can be satiating, can make you feel more satisfied. And so if we're looking, of course, you're probably eating a lot of vegetables if you're on a lower-calorie diet, but that's the place we'd automatically look to find fiber and low calories is more vegetables. So, you know, one thing we might look at for a snack might be something simple like carrot sticks and a little bit of hummus, where you're getting some protein and you're getting this, or a smoothie. Maybe you have a light yogurt that's got 10 grams of protein and you've got fresh berries and ice, and really that's not that many calories, but you have fiber from the berries and you have protein from the yogurt. So those would be the things I'd try to look at doing, where you're not adding a lot of calories either way, but you're making sure you got protein, consistent amount at every meal. Next week I'm actually going to a board that I'm on is a national protein board, and we have our meetings next week in Denver. And there will be some of our researchers who are on this board presenting at the meeting. And a few things that have come out from their studies have really looked at least having 30 grams at a meal, 30 grams of protein at each meal. Most of us do not get 30 grams at breakfast unless we really make a point to do that. We might do it at dinner.
Wow.
Yeah, 30 grams is kind of a lot for breakfast. So that might be something you could think
of. I was going to say, do you have any recipes that you might recommend for breakfast in that regard?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a tough one.
Well, there are some simple things you could do. I mean, we always think about eggs for breakfast, right? And, of course, mm-hmm. the egg yolk has more fat. But if you took one egg and 3 whites right away and you scramble that up, that's about 20 grams of protein. So that's an easy way to get 20. So if you had that and then you had some toast or fruit and maybe 1 glass of milk or soy milk, there's 30 grams easily. And so it's not really that hard to get in. You could even think of things like lean ham or lean turkey breast, you know, rolling that up in a tortilla in the morning and having that with some fruit and yogurt and not that many calories, but all of a sudden your protein is up. So looking at ways to do that, adding in lean meats or eggs or more milk, more yogurt. Some of the Greek yogurts now, a cup is 15 grams of protein. So if you had a cup of yogurt and you added in some fruit to that, and then maybe you even had nuts where you might add another 10 grams or 5 grams of protein. So there's ways you can do it. And remembering that whole grains, too, have more protein generally. And so if you have 2 slices of whole wheat bread, for example, that might be 7 or 8 grams of protein. There are some of even the mini bagels that are out now that are the whole wheat bagels that also have, in even a mini bagel is 5, 6, 7 grams of protein. So you might have that. Egg whites or the egg beaters, something like that. And then you have a yogurt and there's 30 grams of protein for your meal. So that might be a good place to start, is really bumping up your protein at breakfast, which tends to carry you through the day if you have higher protein in the morning.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. How much protein is in 1 egg?
One egg is somewhere around 6, 7, 8 grams of protein.
Okay.
And there is some protein in the yolk. I mean, we always think of the whites being protein, the yolks being fat, but it's not that clear cut. There's certainly a gram or two, maybe 3 grams of protein in the yolk too. So, and the yolk also has vitamin E and other good things. So you really don't want to get rid of every yolk, but the white itself really is clear protein. Yeah. So adding that, more of that in is good.
Okay. Well, one of my favorite things to have in the refrigerator made up hard-cooked eggs. You just take one, and it's perfect convenience food. So, all right.
Exactly.
Let's take another call. A listener in Chicago on line 4. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and you're on the air with Susan Kundrat. Hi. Chicago, line 4.
The expression used to be metabolism. I mean, location, location, location. But now metabolism, metabolism, metabolism. Am I getting through?
We just got you on here, and we missed the first part of your remark. So we got from location, location, location to metabolism.
There's an article in the Chicago Tribune this last Sunday that talks about new apparatus, gadgets, if you will, that some dietitians have developed in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, called the Advantage Nutritional Wellness Program. And they are able to rate the metabolism a person has over a period of time and determine how many calories they're burning, as well as reading on how much food and exercise they would recommend for the person to continue to convert that body fat and also assimilation of the nutrients into muscle tissue and general better health and well-being. Well, I was wondering if you had any views on the fact that I'd heard long ago there were almost a dozen types of metabolism that are in existence, and I was just wondering if you had any views on the matter of metabolism.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, I think the individual metabolism is the big question mark for a lot of people. We can do all the figures in the world when we're trying to figure out how much energy or calories someone needs and protein and so on. But we're all different inside, and sometimes it's hard to figure that out. There are new programs now, and in many places locally here in Champaign and everywhere, can do this kind of testing. There's companies like New Leaf programs, and there's other ones where you can actually go in, and if you go in and you're real quiet and sitting down for 30 minutes, you haven't had caffeine, anything like that, haven't eaten in the day, and then you can be tested and breathe into an apparatus and get an idea of what your resting metabolic rate is, or your basic metabolic rate. So we can get an idea of, even if you didn't exercise in the day, if you didn't get up and move around, how many calories would you require just to maintain? And then we can build on that. So that's a real help to people in the field, like myself, working with clients, so we can get an idea of what might be appropriate. A colleague of mine I work with in North Carolina, she has data where she actually did figures for many of her athletes she worked with, to just as with basic recommendations that we have, figured what their basal needs are again before they got up and did any exercise, and then she tested them all. She had these 5 different athletes, and they're all different sizes, and the differences with what we'd recommend based on our calculations to what was actually tested on them in some athletes was 1,000 calorie difference. So you might have, I might have, for example, an athlete who just can't gain weight, and we're working and we're trying all these things. Well, it turns out that his metabolism is just so high that he's way off the charts on anything we'd ever recommend. So we have to really bump that up, which is why you do a lot of trial and error when you're working with nutrition with clients, and it may be the other way around for other people. So I think, you know, your comments on metabolism, there could be who knows how many different ways our bodies react. And we know that it's also based on a lot of particular things like lean body mass. As we lose lean body mass as we get older or lose muscle, our metabolism goes down. We know it drops around 5% every decade, our metabolism. So the calories we burn at age 50 is very different from what we burn at age 20, even if you didn't exercise. So that makes a big difference too. But I don't know how many different types there are, I would say, but I would just say that that's the big question mark, is what's going on inside the body. And you may recall some studies from, I think it was from University of Minnesota a year or so ago, where they looked at people and whether they were fidgeters or not. And, you know, during the day, whether they moved around a little bit, fidgeted in their seat. And those people burned 300-400 more calories a day than the people who didn't fidget. And that was a difference with many people maintaining weight over time versus gaining weight. And so a lot of different things that can affect our calorie needs, that's for sure.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line 1. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I have 2 questions, and then I'll listen offline. The first is sort of about big grains, nuts. And my wife wanted to know if roasting just plain whole, plain pecans, shell pecans, or almonds reduces their nutritional value. And then also, I'd like to know if you have much experience in using amaranth grains, and if so, how you use them and cook them. And I'll listen offline. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Well, roasting nuts, and I'm not sure the difference that would occur. I don't believe there's a big difference when you roast nuts in terms of nutritional value. Usually when we heat any type of food, some nutrition is changed. Some nutrients are changed a little bit in their nutrient profile. I can't say for certain which ones would be changed. Certainly, though, roasted nuts are still very nutritious. They still have the vitamin E because that's basically found in the fat in the nut, and they're still just as high in protein, and they have the fibers and everything. So I'd say the key nutrients that would be in nuts would not be significantly affected, as far as I know. There may be food scientists listening who might know different and could call in with that. But as far as I know, that's not a problem. And, of course, you know, that gets to a point of more nuts in the diet being healthy. And even though the fat is there, it's good fat. So it's really a real important part to add to your diet is nuts if you like them. So that's the first question.
Amaranth,
I think, was the second. I have not personally used amaranth. I know when I was looking at some of the grains, amaranth you can find in flour, just like you can find this teff flour. So you could use it in flour. You can use the actual grain itself. But I don't have experience cooking with that myself. I wonder if anybody does. I wonder if the listener does.
Well, the listener is no longer with us, so he might want to call back if he's got information there to share with us. Okay, let's take another. We got a follow-up question from our listener in Chicago. Line four again. Good afternoon.
Metabolism, the next question becomes assimilation. And with our aging and process, I understand our digestive juices may be somewhat different as we age. And things like hydrochloric acid and other enzymes that are beneficial for digestion and nutrition, assimilation are a factor. Can you comment on those factors to the extent that they influence our ability to assimilate and digest the food? Thank you.
Okay.
Well, yes, I think certainly as we get older, the digestive system doesn't work as well. Some of that is the fact that things don't move along as well as we get older. But like you mentioned, there's definitely changes in the stomach, the acidity, you know, the acid of the stomach and which nutrients are absorbed or not absorbed as well. And the big one that always comes to mind is B12, because we say as a general rule, at age 50 or over, you really want to supplement with vitamin B12 because it's a vitamin that actually needs a certain acidity to be, you know, well absorbed. The gut needs to be able to absorb it too as well. And it doesn't as we get older. So the body just doesn't work as well with that vitamin. So B12 is something that we recommend supplementing with, whether it's in a multivitamin or you take it in an additional vitamin. As we get older, the body just doesn't absorb it very well, whether it's from food or not. So there definitely are a lot of changes that happen in the body as we get older too. And many people get interested in digestive enzymes and should they take some extra things. And for some people, those can be helpful. But more often than not, it's a matter of still maintaining a good eating pattern, making sure that you're not missing out on certain nutrients and then maybe taking an extra multivitamin, in particular with that B12, because we just know we're not going to absorb things as well as we get older.
Okay. And I have Googled recipes using amaranth.
Wonderful.
So if you're out there and you're wondering what to do with amaranth, you might try that very same thing. I'll just tell you a little bit about what I came up with. Amaranth with spinach tomato mushroom sauce.
That sounds good.
And apparently what you need to do with amaranth is you need to cook it in boiling water. So in order to cook amaranth, and I'm going to have to try some new things here. Add amaranth to boiling water, bring back to boil, reduce heat and cover. Simmer for 18 to 20 minutes. And this is 1 cup amaranth seed. So is that what we're talking about here?
Right.
Okay. And then in the handout that you gave us, amaranth, 2.5 cups of water. It doesn't say, 1 cup dry amaranth, 2.5 cups water, cook time 20 to 25 minutes, yields 2.5 cups. So there are some recipes out there. The other one that came on this website, amaranth grits. Now, this says amaranth, but not amaranth seeds. So I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah, I think that's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So if you want to have shrimp and grits, you might try amaranth grits. change.
Sounds very good. And most of these grains, then you could, you know, the different ones that I've used, you could replace them. You could use them in similar ways that you may use something like rice. In other words, if you make a salad with rice, you could try some of these other grains with rice, or, you know, try them in ways where you might have a little bit of herbs and maybe a little bit of sometimes I'll cook these grains with some chicken bouillon or vegetable bouillon or something, so it's got some flavor in there too. So try them in ways that you would maybe use your typical grains to see how you like them. That's another way to kind of move into some of the different grains.
Okay, and now I'm going to – a grain that you just mentioned but we haven't really talked about, and I know it's an ancient grain. I don't know very much about this. It's an ancient grain, and it's being used now in some – products that you'll find at the grocery store or at a health food store, triticale.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, triticale is also, like you said, an ancient grain that we're finding more, and I'm not sure if that's also, you know, some of these grains are from some of the African countries, and it may also be more of an African grain. I don't know if it says on there. Many of these grains are smaller grains, not all of them, but many of them are smaller grains that, again, you would boil for maybe a half cup and use those. If you look at the nutritional breakdown, triticale, for example, if you have a half a cup of that, it's about 100 calories, which is pretty typical for serving a grain, and it's got 3 grams of protein and 3 grams of fiber. So it's going to be a real good source of both of those. And so I need to use more grains myself. I mean, I kind of get used to some and try some of these others. Like I really like barley, for example. For a while I cooked with a lot of millet. Now millet itself, I got familiar with that because millet is a grain that is really recommended as one of the first grains for babies when they start eating solid food. And so one thing I remember is cooking up this huge pot of millet and trying to get my daughter to eat that when she started on solids, and she would not for the life of her eat any of it. And finally, I tried some of that and thought, it's really not that good. So I didn't really cooked with that some, but not a whole lot because the taste didn't appeal to me too much either, and she never would eat it. But but if you can get your babies to eat it, that's a good first grain, one of the first grains.
Okay. Actually, triticale flour. It says a type of flour ground from a high-protein man-made grain produced by cross-breeding wheat and rye.
Okay.
So there's a little bit more information for us. Okay, let's take another call. We've got a listener calling in this afternoon from Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hi, how's it going? I'm a student, actually, in Boulder, Colorado, and I was calling. There's a lot of debate. I'm a student of massage therapy. And there's been a lot of debate over probiotics, especially in, say, yogurt form, when they're not encapsulated, about whether they actually become denatured in mm-hmm. the stomach, and so whether you're actually absorbing, you know, any of the acidophilus, the bifidus, those. And then also, if you wouldn't mind speaking just a little bit to more water, green tea, things like that in the diet, and how that can help just overall function of everything. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, those bring up two good points because your question about probiotics. Probiotics are what we would consider foods or supplements that add more good bacteria to the body, particularly to the gut. So that help with digestion and help utilizing nutrients. And as we get older, this is even more important because, again, maybe as we mentioned, the gut may not run quite as well or work quite as well. But there certainly have been studies utilizing yogurt itself as the medium for the probiotics and kefir and those types of things. And so we do think that they're certainly worthwhile to have in yogurt and kefir, and we do have studies on that. As the caller mentioned, there's also some concern that maybe having it more in a form that is encapsulated so it goes farther down in the gut and maybe gets absorbed mm-hmm. a little bit better and isn't broken down as soon may be helpful. I don't know that we really know everything about the probiotics, you know, enough to say for sure. The one thing that I'll say, a few years ago I went to a meeting and part of what was, you know, discussed, this was a meeting out in D.C. looking at functional nutrients and functional foods, and I was able to talk with some of the people who do a lot of research in this area, and And one of the recommendations, because one of our big concerns is, what do we really tell consumers? We want to make sure we're telling consumers something that's really working and that's valid. And one thing, one of the women I was talking to, one of the researchers recommended was utilizing different yogurts, different brands, different types, maybe utilizing some kefir, which is a more of a pourable type yogurt drink. And if you use probiotics in a supplement form, not using the same one all the time, because you have different bacteria and different supplements. And so her whole thought was that what we know most about probiotics is that having different types of these bacteria is probably the most beneficial. And I think we do know some about, if you have certain concerns, which bacteria might be more beneficial than others, mm-hmm. and those kinds of things, you have particular health concerns. But in general, having a good variety of these bacteria is good. So in a general sense, what we can tell people is maybe don't eat the same brand of yogurt all the time, because they have their own particular types of bacteria that are added. So you could change types of yogurt. I tell my clients, buy the yogurt that's on sale, usually, because that changes, because it might be one brand one time, one brand another time. Maybe use some of the Greek yogurt, some other types of yogurts. But we do think, you know, really based on studies, that that's helpful too. It doesn't have to just be in supplemental form. So that's the first question. The second thing, looking at water, green tea, and fluids in general. Of course, we shouldn't, you know, avoid talking about the fluids if we're going to talk about whole grains, because we get more fiber and we've got to make sure we move it along. So water and green tea in particular is a high antioxidant, you know, medium to get fluids in. Black tea is also very helpful and very healthy. A lot of nutrients in black tea as well. The thing to be careful of is that anything you drink a lot of might have some negative consequences. In other words, tea, for example, does have some tannins, does have some things that may decrease absorption of certain nutrients. And so there have been some cases of people drinking 2, 3, 4 gallons of tea a day and then having other minerals be malabsorbed. And so you don't want too much of anything. But some people take the green tea because there have been a handful, maybe even just a couple studies looking at green tea and increasing metabolism. But those studies are really small and we don't really know that much about it yet. So it's not, we can't really say, oh, drink green tea and you're going to lose weight.
Okay.
Because we just don't have the bulk of studies to show that. But we do know that both green and black tea are really good in terms of high antioxidants and healthy for you, particularly if you drink maybe 2 or 3, 4 cups a day. But I wouldn't go crazy on it either.
Don't overdo it.
And with water, of course, we just really want to stay hydrated, especially now. You want to drink more than you think you need to drink, but there's no reason to think you have to go to the bathroom more than every couple hours. And so if you're going more often than that, you're probably overhydrating. But that's a good gauge. Every 2 or 3 hours you're going to the bathroom, you have a good amount of urine. That's very important to stay hydrated there.
Okay, very good. Well, we're here at the end of time for this month with Susan Kundrat. And let me mention once again that Susan brought in 2 handouts for us, all about whole grains, both of these handouts, the grains cooking chart and nutritional comparison, and all about whole grains, which is a nice primer on whole grains. And if you'd like to, for us to send these out to you, all you need to do, listeners, is drop us a line with a self-addressed stamped envelope. That would be great. To The Afternoon Magazine, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. And we're here at WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. We'll see you in August, I hope.
That sounds good. And if I have one second,
yes,
I do have a class tomorrow, if anybody comes, and it's free.
Okay.
It's at the ARC. We'll be doing, it's at 12:15 at the ARC Kitchen, which is the old Impey building on campus at the U of I. We're looking at the Best Life Diet Cookbook by Bob Green. So I'm going to do a cookbook review, and we'll try some recipes, including a whole grain pasta recipe, cucumber soup recipe, and so on. So if anybody wants to come over, it's at 12:15 down in the ARC Kitchen.
Okay, and where is the ARC located?
The ARC is on Peabody Avenue. So it's actually Peabody and 4th, right next to the football stadium. So it's the old Impey Recreation Building on campus. You can park on the west side.
Okay, very good. Susan, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Susan Kundrat is a licensed registered dietitian. She is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move.